And hello everyone, welcome to Petroleum World Logic, 24th of March 2013. It's 6 p.m. in the UK, 2 p.m. Eastern Time in the US. Just a very quick announcement, as you are all very aware, this is our last show on Blog TV, but fear not, we're going to carry on Vaughan Live. So if you go down into the playground there, you'll see a link, or at the top of the chat room, there's another link there. Go and follow us. We're back on next Sunday with a special guest, Dan Barker. And like I say, that's the main announcement out the way. So just to let you all know, we're a regular show on science, skepticism, and secular issues. And like I say, if you do want to call in, the contact is Petroleum World Logic. Just add that to your Skype. Send me a PM with a general gist of your question, and we'll add you in time. Please don't call the show, as it'll just interrupt us. So, and also, like, by calling in, you're granting us permission to use your likeness. So please, no funny business if you see the recording, because we are uploaded to iTunes and YouTube later on. So very quickly, I'll run through our much reduced panel this week, but all good. And welcoming, as always, Marty.
Hi.
And Jay, you're not there right now, are you? No, we've lost Jay for a second, so I'll very quickly introduce today's special guest. You probably all know her from her video last year when she came out at the American Atheists Convention as an atheist. She's a former Methodist pastor, I think probably all her life, went to seminary the whole lot. And also, yeah, director of the Clergy Project, and also involved with the Humanist Association of Florida. So please welcome everyone, Teresa McBain. Welcome to the show, Teresa.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Honored to have you. And I do believe we have Jay back. Jay? Okay, we don't have Jay at the moment. So, Teresa, we'll just go through, like, basically, can you give us a little bit, like, you did come from a religious family, and that was always present in your life, yeah?
Yeah, that was. My dad was a Baptist pastor, so I grew up in a home as a preacher's kid in church. With the exception of this past year, I doubt I missed more than just a couple of Sundays. So, yeah, absolutely, religion was an enormous part of my life. And it wasn't that I was forced in any way. If I'd had a choice, well, I guess that kind of doesn't make sense to say I wasn't forced. It was expected that we would be in church. There was never a question of, do you want to go? But even if there had been that question, it would have been a no-brainer for me. Of course I wanted to go. I loved it. It was everything that I was and everything that I wanted to be. So my entire identity was a religious identity. And, you know, actually now I'm just beginning to learn how to separate myself from that religious identity.
Yeah. And with that, are you still finding, like, I know it's kind of weird, even on Sundays, are you still kind of waking up in sort of church mode? Is that still there?
Sometimes. Yeah. It's really funny that we're recording this today, because a very good friend of mine gave a lecture at the Unitarian Church in town, and I promised him that I would attend and support him. And I went. Now, the Unitarian Church here in Tallahassee is very unique in that it's exactly what a free thinker would think of a Unitarian Church. There wasn't, as far as I could tell, a Christian element to it. But still, I woke up thinking, okay, this is weird. I've got to get dressed and go to church. And I've gotten out of the habit. At first, it was weird. I didn't know what to do with myself. And then after 4 or 5 months, it was pretty cool. I could sleep late, drink coffee, and, you know, Sunday was my day all the time.
And like, have you actually been back to church? And if you have, what's the view like sitting on the other side?
I haven't been back.
No.
Except today, I went to the Unitarian Universalist Church.
And like I say, so what was it like kind of sitting in the pews? Was it?
I was anxious. I was nervous as I was going. And I know a lot of the people. I've spoken to their CFI group. But yeah, I was anxious. I was nervous. I went in. I took one of their programs, didn't know what to expect. But then when the service started, it wasn't like the church services I'd experienced. So it was really nice. you know, they had a group from all around the world, a gentleman from Scotland, a lady from the Philippines, another lady from Central America, and a gentleman from Russia. And they are traveling, and they sing these different songs from their country. So it was really nice. I mean, it was nothing like any of the churches I'd ever been to. So my fears were not founded, but I was definitely apprehensive.
I have a question for you.
We have
you.
Gino.
Hi, Teresa. You speak about doubt and how
yes.
the religions never accept doubt. And when you ask your fathers about some questions, he always ask you, you have doubt, and you said, yes, daddy.
Yes, yeah. The religious faith tradition I grew up in, that wasn't accepted. You didn't question, you didn't doubt. The tenets of our faith were laid out really clearly and very, very clearly articulated. And you were expected to take it by faith, that that was the truth. So when I started questioning in middle school, yeah, exactly what Jay just said. I was told that that's not what a person does, a Christian does. That God doesn't tolerate doubting and questioning, and it shows that I have a lack of faith and I need to grow and mature as a Christian so I'm not unfaithful, or I have weak faith would be a better way to say it. And that, you know, essentially, if you've heard my talks before, from that point on, which was about the eighth grade until decades later, I ignored and suppressed any types of doubts or questions because, you know, that was, I didn't want to be a person of weak faith.
And Gia, are you there now?
Yeah, this is the problem with the religions, all kind of religions, Islam, Christianity, and others. Never ever accept doubt. Doubt, that's mean question. Question, that's mean you need answer. And the religion, they are not have any answer, logic answer for our questions. So tell me how we can deal with the religion refuse doubt and questions.
You know, that's a tough one because for me, being told at a very early age that doubting, questioning, you know, trying to reason through things is wrong. And it's not just wrong in the sense of, you know, pop you on the hand. No, 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 that's naughty. It's wrong in the sense of your eternal soul and punishment are at stake if you doubt and question. It's a strong, strong motivator when something is tied to what's going to happen to you after this life or even in this life. You know, a lot of Christian theology teaches that if you sin, then bad things will happen to you because God is trying to punish you to bring you back to where you're not sinning. So when you tie all those things together, I won't say it's an impossible situation because obviously I overcame it using reason and logic and came out, but, you know, that's a really tough question. I think it's going to have to be identifying the person and where they are. And if you've got somebody, I have plenty of people in my life that are absolutely, they absolutely refuse to even entertain the thought. And they say, the Bible says, and it's all by faith. You know, I don't need to worry about science or history or archaeology or critical thinking or anything. It's all faith. So when you have someone like that, I think you've got the cards stacked against you. But if there's someone who is like I was toward the end where I'm allowing myself to question a little bit, I think it's probably a little easier to assess where they are and talk to them at that level without saying, just, you know, dumping on them basically, giving them the whole story, but taking them. If you've heard my talk, the first things that I was ready to take, I guess my baby steps, was reading things like Bart Ehrman. Very safe. He's a theologian. I was a pastor and a theologian, so he was really safe for me. So, I don't know, very long answer, and I don't know that it answered the question very well, but that's my two cents.
No, you did well.
Okay. I think, Mortimer, you wanted to come in with a question?
Yeah. One thing that that always comes up when I talk to a theist when it comes to this whole doubt thing is when you bring up another religion and say, well, they see the exact same thing. And they can know that their religion is true because they have absolute faith, and doubting that is what would send you to hell or whatever, be reborn as a dung beetle or whatever they believe. And I can never get a theist to give an answer to the question, how do you know that your faith is right and their faith is wrong? Because you're both giving the exact same reasoning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does that work?
That's a very good point. Yeah. And I've actually had some conversations with family that went along those lines. And, you know, when you use the Bible and the Bible makes claims that says this is the true word of God, and it does in the Old Testament, it states clearly that it is 100% true without error, and it is the only resource for faith. And for living
just
your life.
Like the Quran.
Right. So both groups are going to argue that, well, that may be good and well, but that they're not true. And then you add to it the New Testament teaching of Jesus saying, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. You've just got this whole mindset that's set, regardless of what you say about another religion, they're wrong. They're all wrong, and we're right. And it, again, it's very hard. I mean, you have to continue to present the facts and continue. And that was one of the things that really hit home for me when I was going through my process. Not only looking at the other religions, but looking back at religions as far back as, I don't know, as far back as when man got up and started to walk around, at all the similarities to the Jesus story and to the Christian faith. And you can see where the sacred text of the Bible and even the Quran at points has been pieced together from mythologies throughout history. So those things were things that really helped me. Of course, I didn't talk to anybody about it because I was afraid to talk to anybody. But if I had...
Sorry, you can finish.
No, I was just saying if I'd had the opportunity to speak to somebody, those things were already on my mind, and I think it would have helped me work through the process a little faster.
I was going to ask...
believe me.
Sorry, Jay, you can go.
Believe me, Teresa. When I was a child, I asked... when I am in school, I asked it in my childhood. and always send me to head the office of school, because they found my questions. It is like breaking the law. I'm breaking the traditional of school. So always I got punished because I am asked because I asked it. But I never stop ask. Even so.
Good for you.
I was wondering to ask Teresa, when you were a pastor, like, what was your view of even other Christian denominations? I mean, were you pretty much like ours is the right one and everyone else is even to that level?
Yeah, I was up until probably 2006 was when I began to shed that part of my belief system. But definitely early on, I was extremely rigid and believing that not just my denomination, but my own personal beliefs were right.
Right.
And it did, you know, I would sit and listen to other people and say, okay, but they're wrong here and they're wrong here and I know the answer. It's a very arrogant viewpoint, but it was, you know, that's just how I was. And then, like I said, in about 2006, I started to see the error of my ways and open my mind a little bit.
Yeah, it reminds me of something that I've been thinking about bringing up in a video or something like that, but a logical fallacy that I like to call the argument from personal infallibility. I believe it, therefore it must be true.
Yeah, exactly. And
just, you know, okay, so I can't prove it. I have no rational justification. Oh, wait, that's right. I believe it. Oh, well, that justifies it. It must be true.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very hard trying to get my head wrapped around my words. It's very hard to argue with that kind of thinking because, yeah, honestly, there isn't thinking involved. And maybe that's, even though it took me a very, very long time to work through it, maybe that's the key to what happened to me, is that I always thought, I was always a thinker. And even though sometimes I was thinking in a way to justify my beliefs and to justify my claims, I was still using my brain and I was still looking and researching. And I think that was part of it as well, because the more I studied, the more I dug, the more I looked at Greek and Hebrew and the ways things were put together, that's when I started to really notice that the threads would unravel the more I dug around and looked through it. And yeah, again, it was a very long process for me. I was just stubborn. I don't know what, but that's one of the big issues, is the person willing to think, or are they just going to continually throw up in your faith? Well, it's faith. You know, I don't have to understand it. It's faith.
There was one question, see, when you were growing up and studying the Bible, I mean, did you actually study all of it, including the kind of, like I say, the X-rated bits? Even as a kid, how did you how were you taught to get your head around that, the really kind of, well, like I say, the kind of horror story stuff?
You're taught it so much. I mean, yeah, think about a 2 and 3 year old child, yeah, and they're taught that the story of Noah's Ark is this wonderful little child's story. When my kids were little, they were making little people was the toy, and they made little people Noah's Ark sets, and they're cute little people, and you know, you play the game and you pretend. And so there's this amount of desensitization, or maybe it's just the fact that it's introduced as not being this horrible, horrific, gory story. And so you just kind of pass over the, oh, okay, they marched 7 times around the city and everybody was destroyed except this one prostitute. Okay. As a kid, you just don't think about it. You sing little songs and you act it out, you know, and it doesn't connect with your, maybe this makes sense. Maybe I'm just crazy. I don't know. But it doesn't connect with your brain as being something like, yeah, you know, more graphically violent than anything you've seen on TV.
Yeah, isn't it also the case that, I remember, I didn't read anything like that myself, but there are these like kids' books about, mm-hmm, Noah's Ark, and they basically said that, oh, this old guy took a bunch of animals and went for a trip in a sailboat, without, yeah, mentioning, oh, mm-hmm, and by the way, everyone else drowned. I mean, they walked 7 times around the city. Oh, they went for a walk.
Yeah, to an extent, I would agree with that. But I would tend to probably say for me that this was also an element of control, because I knew that they died. I mean, no, I didn't identify with it as being this horrible swords cutting people's heads off kind of thing, rocks falling on them. But the moral of the story was, if you don't obey God, this is what's going to happen to you. So there's that element of control, of keeping you in line, of keeping you from questioning and doubting, and from keeping you within the appropriate boundaries of your religious experience. Because not only can hell be the ultimate result, but severe punishment, even a horrible death, is also something that's promised in there. You know, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, follow the rules, you know.
Okay, I think, Jay, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, Trisa, you said wonderful things about your son. This always fascinated me, when your religion families think there are no each other very well, but in reality, religion families, they are not know each other very well because they are always keep secret from each other because the fear of religions and the red lines of the religions. And I love it when you said, I go to my son and during our trip to my grandfather's, I think so, or something like this, I told him I am atheist. And he told me, it's okay, mommy. I am too from long time ago, but I was afraid to tell you.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that comment and the conversation very well. Yeah, I mean, and on the one hand, I felt really elated because, you know, oh, this person is, this relationship is salvaged and I don't have to worry about it, that, you know. But on the other hand, I felt really bad that he had had to keep that from me for so long for the same reasons I was keeping it from everybody else, because he's afraid that I would be the one to reject him, that I wouldn't understand, that I'd start, I don't know, leaving Bible verses on his bathroom mirror or, you know, doing prayer dances around his bedroom, you know, all those things that could have happened. So it was just, I mean, it was kind of a bittersweet moment for me that I could be open and honest, but at the same time, I felt even more horrible that I had been so unapproachable.
Okay, we have a question from the chat room there. I'll just scroll back to find it. Question is, did you think the Bible was easy to interpret correctly? And then how did you explain so many denominations of Christianity?
I didn't feel like it was easy to interpret. I felt like that it required a lot of study. And I also looked to the Bible itself, said that it was difficult to interpret. You know, in the book of 2 Timothy, it said, study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman who rightly divides the word of truth. Okay, so King James English, basically the Bible's saying, you gotta study. This is hard stuff, and you want to study because you want to be acceptable to God. Okay, so easy answer to that. Difficult to study. And what was the second part of the question?
It was like, and how did you kind of, how did you explain all the different Christian denominations?
Oh, yeah. So I get carried away in my answers and forget
the
questions.
<That's no problem. laughs>
Again, that's that part of tribalism. We used to joke about the Church of Christ, which my aunt was a part of the Church of Christ. And we used to make this joke that when she got to heaven, there was going to be this area where she existed, and then there were going to be cement walls all around her that went up as high as she could see. And the joke was, it's because she thinks she's the only one there. Well, in reality, the majority of the fundamentalist denominations believe that, all of them. They believe that the Baptists are right and the Methodists are wrong. The Episcopals are right and the Lutherans are wrong. And everybody believes the Catholics are wrong. So, you know, it's again that attitude of arrogance, that attitude of superiority. I've studied, God revealed this to me, and I am, you don't think this out loud, but I am better than the other person because I've come across the real truth and they're still struggling to find it.
I totally agree with you on this point, Teresa. Even in Quran, it is the same things in Quran. Everyone or every mufti or every sheikh, the head of the religions group, said, I know better than you.
Yeah.
And this is asked always this question to them. How you know better than me if I have the same mind and you don't have more knowledge than me? If you someone told you, I know better than.
Hello, G. I think we've lost her, have we? G?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a question. Then you mentioned the Catholics. Everyone thinks the Catholics are wrong. that reminds me, because fundamentalists or well, yeah, I suppose I should say fundamentalists. That's not the right word. Oh, screw it. All those little Protestant churches. Yeah. they all seem not just to be under the impression that Catholicism is wrong. I mean, obviously they think it's wrong because they don't believe in it, but they seem to have this almost hatred for it. They say that, I mean, it's not even Christianity, that right. It's paganism, that it's, you know, what's that all about?
Well, I mean, again, it points to that attitude of my God's better than your God. But, I mean, it's when I was growing up, we were taught several things about the Catholic Church, which was the basis for them being the evil, quote unquote, that all the religious denominations made them out to be, which I might add, some of the more very conservative conspiracy theorists kind of Christians actually think that in the book of Revelations, the great whore Babylon is actually the Pope in the Catholic Church. So anyway, side note there. We were taught that there were several reasons why the Catholics were wrong. Number one, they only allowed men, which I think is hilarious because most the Baptist denominations definitely were patriarchal, misogynistic kind of religious groups. But number one, they only allowed men. Number two, the men could not be married. That was obviously wrong. Three, they disobeyed the Ten Commandments. Second commandment, you shall not make any graven images. And if you've ever seen a Catholic church, there are graven images everywhere. Even their cross had Jesus hanging on it, which supposedly was extremely wrong. And then, you know, they confessed to a man. They didn't confess to Jesus. And they, oh my goodness, the worst of all is they pray to Mary as the co-redemptrix. So that, you know, all these little things they want to pick apart when in fact, if they looked at their own selves, of course, this doesn't happen. In a very, very misogynistic group of people, which, you know, when I was growing up in church, we had icons, we had crosses. People put crosses on their graves, wore them around their neck, same difference. Now, we didn't pray to Mary, but we definitely prayed to Jesus to give us a car, you know, parking spot up front, which I see no difference in the two.
Another chat room question from Shy Frog. Did you believe that you had a relationship with God? And if so, do you now look back on it as you more having an imaginary friend?
Oh. I guess you could put it that way, because it definitely was a lot of time that was spent talking to something that wasn't there and thinking that that something was talking back, not just talking back, but giving me direction for my life. I mean, when you think of it, it's almost insanity. Every decision I made up until about 2006, 2007, was directly related to these conversations I had with this imaginary friend. Every decision. Should I move? Should I stay? Should I take this job? Should I not take this job? I mean, everything. That's kind of scary when you think about it.
And so I was going to follow. Mortimer, do you have a question there?
No, Jay wanted to ask something.
But I think we've lost
her. Oh, she's offline. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I guess I'll just go with the one I thought of beforehand, which might completely change the topic. but anyway, this is something that I've been thinking. I don't really think so anymore, but it's something that someone like you who used to be a pastor who I mean, you would be in a position to answer this. But I've never really been a theist myself. I grew up an atheist. Religion wasn't a topic of conversation even in my home when I was growing up. I was exposed to it in elementary school where it was taught from a non-confessional perspective. Mm-hmm. When I was exposed to it at first, I actually, much to my surprise, found it interesting because my teacher taught it so very well. She actually made the stories in the Old Testament sound like a good story. Like she knew which parts to pick and she made it. She didn't say, this is what happened. She told it as as fiction, basically. And I really enjoyed it, and I figured, you know what, I want to have a closer look at this. So when I was like 8 or 9, I started reading the Bible. And halfway through Genesis, I was definitely an atheist.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. This is not the stories we were taught, basically. We were taught the child-friendly versions, basically. But I also noticed already at that age, this is absolutely stupid. And it was just like, how I figured, I'm too smart to believe this. How is it that there are adults who believe it? And yeah. And as I got older, it you know, and like I said, I've grown away from this now. But the ideas of they don't really believe it popped up in my head, like. What do they teach in seminary? Is it like, okay, welcome everyone. Okay, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page here. You all know this is bullshit, right? This is all about conning people for money or making sure that the people in power stay in power or something like that. I mean, obviously, like I said, I don't believe that's what's actually going on. I rant against conspiratards. But how is that? Among clergy, is it common that there are people like you who basically during their, you know, as they study religion, as they read the Bible over and over and over again, realize, wait a minute, what am I doing? This is stupid.
There is some. Obviously, there's at least 435, because that's the number of the clergy that are in the clergy project now. There are some, but then there are those who, there's a couple reasons for it. Some denominations don't require any kind of formal education whatsoever. And I think that kind of tends to keep you locked into that shell because you don't really step outside of it. You can come straight out of high school and be ordained and be a pastor.
Oh.
So there's no further learning whatsoever except what you get on your own.
So there are people who are ordained who haven't even perhaps read the Bible? Is that what you're saying?
No. Well, I guess it could be possible. I mean, it could be possible because if you know the right people, if it's a family church, I've known people whose dad was a pastor and they were not nominated, ordained. But for a lot of the more stricter churches or the more mainline churches, you have to have some type of an education.
Yeah.
And I think that helps depending if you go to someplace really conservative, it's not going to help so much, but at least you're thinking and at least you're kind of stepping out of the box.
Yeah.
So, there are some. My friend Jerry DeWitt, he didn't go to Bible college. He came right out of school and started pastoring. And he was able, through his own thinking and his own exploration, to come to the conclusion that he did not believe in God. And he came out, I guess October would be 2 years ago.
Yeah. And I'm also thinking, of course, about Matt Dillahunty.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Who didn't even get that far.
Yeah, exactly. And he's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jay, welcome back.
Okay, Teresa. I'm sorry, guys. My internet has allergic from truth in this grave. So, Teresa, this is always told as the community of religion community. Gays is bad. Gays is evil. Gays, they are not human. Gays is sin.
Yes.
And you said, I think so one of your relative, your brother?
My brother,
You said he made his wedding, and I will never go to his wedding if I am not atheist. And even if I go, I will give him a lecture about religion. So this is the religion. religions, I found religions is separate people. Even people love each other. Religions separate them, separate the members of the families. What is your feeling in that moment when you feel I have free will and free conscience as human being, as atheist, to share my brother's his happiness? Give me the indication of your feeling.
My feeling then, or now, or both?
Both.
Okay. When he first told me that he was struggling with he didn't even call it homosexuality or anything. It was called same-sex attraction, because he's deeply religious and I'm deeply religious. I mean, he was worked in church as well. So as soon as he confessed it to me, I mean, we both had the idea, this is horrible, this is sin, we've got to pray and get him delivered or healed from this. So for years, that's exactly what happened. And he went through a process. I mean, it's a long story, but he went through a process where he finally understood and accepted that he was gay and there was nothing he could do about it. And I respected that, but I had a difficult time with it because, you know, this means if he's accepted he's gay, then when he dies, he's not going to go to heaven. He's going to be tortured forever. So I really started digging into it and studying it because obviously I love my brother and I don't want that to happen to him. And I came to the conclusion basically that he was gay, but it wasn't because, and that he wouldn't go to hell, but it was simply because ever since God created the world has been in a state of decay, and that's just one of those states. It's like the genes in his brain mutated. And this weird mutation is what makes a person gay. So that's how I got there. Now, as I worked through my issues and dealt with my own doubts about the faith, one of the first things I would say that went away was the whole thought of gay people are wrong, their brains are mutated. You know, I really began to understand that that's just who they are. And as much as I am attracted to guys, my brother's attracted to guys too.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and once I kind of got my head wrapped around it, I remember we were hanging out. I don't even remember where we were hanging. I think we were in Washington, D.C. eating lunch at one of the outside, one of the little seating areas outside. And I was checking out guys. And I noticed my brother was checking out guys. And we both just laughed because he's like, who would have thought we were both sitting here and checking out guys that are walking down the street together?
Do you think this happiness, the happiness and the bond between humanity, religion destroy it?
Yeah, it definitely has that potential. It definitely works to divide people. If you think about some of the major religions, just what we were talking about earlier, growing up, you know, the most obvious example, Protestants are divided against religion, Catholics. There's even war that has been waged in many different places across the world because it's Protestants versus Catholics. And that's not even getting into people who are Muslim or anything that doesn't deal with Jesus Christ. It's divisive in the fact, in that aspect, it's divisive in the fact that straights are okay and gays are bad. So they're divided on that. You know, gay people aren't welcome at church. They definitely can't get married. They most definitely can't be in the ministry. Women are subjected to and have to live a life of submission against, not against, but they have to be submissive to men. They can't have leadership positions. They're second-class citizens. You know, it's been divisive in race. The whole Civil War, basically, slavery came out of religious components and because people didn't feel that black people had souls. You know, that's just off the top of my head, several examples of how it can be so divisive and so harmful.
Yeah.
Jay, oh, we've lost Elliot again.
you mentioned this thing about your brother coming out, and you eventually, no, you said that, yeah, you thought he was going to be tortured forever, at least at first. So how did you, or maybe it's your denomination I should ask about, explain the whole works versus faith thing?
Well, here's the funny thing. The denomination I was a part of believed in eternal security, once saved, always saved.
Yeah.
So according to their own faith and belief structure, it doesn't matter what I believe now. According to them, I'm once saved, always saved. Now, of course, they won't tell you that, but I just find that humorous.
And also, even if they believe homosexuals go to hell, if he was saved at one point, who cares,
then
right?
How do you explain that? Right.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's just convenient kind of a theology for them, because then they can say, oh yeah, once saved, always saved. That means I'm in. But as soon as you mess up, you know, as soon as you are a drunk or a drug addict or you have an abortion or you're gay or you become an atheist or you stop going to church, all that goes out the window and you really weren't saved to begin with.
Ah, right.
Yeah, that's the justification.
If you truly believed this wouldn't have happened, yeah.
Right, the old no true Scotsman theory or argument.
Got it.
Yeah, it's just very convenient. I mean, they try to argue themselves out of a paper bag sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay, we've lost G yet again. So I just want to, can you tell us about the Clergy Project? Just give us an overview of it, like what's it all about and like the things that you do and also your own story, how it helped you.
Yeah, the Clergy Project is an online safe house. It's confidential for active and former clergy people who no longer have any supernatural beliefs. It's a place that, like I said, it's an online forum, a support group of sorts, where a person who makes application and then is interviewed by a screener to make sure that they're not somebody just trying to get in there and out a pastor or something, that they're given access to this site and can go on and post things. I mean, it's just a standard forum site at that point. But what it is really, it's, for me, it was the very first place that I was able to talk to anybody. And true, it's through writing and typing on a forum, but I could write anything in the world and say, this is how I'm feeling, this is what's going on, and not worry about it, because there would be those who would come on immediately and say, hey, I'm right there with you, or I've been there, or anything. I mean, they truly are there to support you. And as I said, I think I was about number 60 coming into the project in 2011, and now there are 435, I think, that are in there. And pardon?
Sorry,
go ahead, Jay.
I said fascinated.
Yeah.
It's incredible number.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely amazing. I really didn't know. I mean, people who are dealing with things always say, I felt like I was the only one. I mean, I think that's just human nature. When something's going on in our life, we feel like we're the only one who's dealing with it. Even though we really know logically that that's not true. Well, when I came into the Clergy Project, I felt like I was the only one, and found then, I thought it was amazing, there were 59 other people like me. To even think there's 435 and there's more that are out there who just haven't heard yet, it's just absolutely incredible.
A question from the chat room came up in relation to that. Out of the 400, how many are still active preachers, if that's not too delicate?
No, I figured somebody would ask that, so I'm trying to find the information. It's somewhere around a third.
Okay.
And that's just, if I find the exact figures, I'll give it to you.
Right, no problem.
excuse me.
I don't know if you can answer this question, because I have heard you have an iman on your book, so to say. I mean,
yes.
I can only imagine, is he in quite a difficult situation? Yeah, just without giving away too much.
Yeah, probably. I mean, definitely we have an imam, and we have people, I think we're represented by every religious group, including Scientology, Jehovah's Witness, Mormons. Now, they're definitely not as prominent as Catholics or Protestants, but
Is it quite difficult to offer support, or do you find the kind of fear they have of the reactions they get is quite similar across the religions?
Yeah, definitely. And here's the thing that really breaks my heart, is that there are some of these pastors who come, or clergy persons who become a part of the Clergy Project, who cannot come out because of those kinds of things. They're either in a country that wouldn't just mean death for themselves, which I'm sure, like when I came out, I fully expected that I would receive a lot of hatred. But the families are involved in that too. So it wouldn't just be that clergy person. It would be risking harm, physical harm too, to their wife, their kids, or their, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandmothers. It's not fair. In my opinion, it's not fair for a person to put that kind of risk onto their family members. You know, it's just really sad for me because, they're going to be trapped.
There's a question.
Yeah, Teresa.
Sorry.
It's okay. Teresa, do you think when you let fears paralyze us, we will be better? Do you think when you put a mask and live and hide from who we are exactly and our true, that's give us safety? In my personal experience, both mask or fears doesn't give me, it doesn't protect me at all. Even it is destroyed me from inside, not out only side. And the threat is still there. Threat of death, kill me and others, threat still there. So regardless of our fears, do you find we should raise our voice and live our life as best as we can, because we have one life, we don't have another's?
Yeah, see, I agree with that. And I attempt to do my best to live that way. That's why I came out. That's why I continue to travel and to speak to groups, to do podcasts, because I want to encourage people with that. And, am I afraid still? Yeah, of course I am. I mean, being an atheist and being open about it isn't the easiest thing in the world to do. And, that's not news to anybody. I'm in the South. I'm in a small town, small-ish town that's conservative. And I'm not the only one. I think probably every person could share a story that's like that. But you're right. Living with the fear that's eating you up inside, it's just, I think that's probably more damaging, at least for me it was, just having to struggle and inside my head so much. Some days I felt like I just couldn't even deal with anything at all. And it's because that fear eats away at you, just like you said. And it has been, even though it's been really, really, really difficult, it's been fulfilling, because I know I'm not living in a state of fear inside my head, and I'm being honest and open, whether people like it or not.
Okay. We have a chat room question, which is, what was the final thing that's kind of pushed you into non-belief? Kind of the very last.
That is such a hard question because it was such a long process. I do know a couple of things that contributed to it. One was just this natural progression of thinking about the contradiction in the Bible, the reality of hell. And I read actually a Christian author who wrote a book about hell. And at the end of this book, this Christian author who pastored a 10,000 member church was very popular in the Protestant world, came out and said he didn't believe that there was a hell. Well, should I say that he caught hell from the Protestant community? So that really, his arguments pushed me to continue my thoughts on it and then ultimately abandon that. I read another couple of Christian authors who were talking about, they were connecting like Greek mythology with Christianity. It was some kind of weird stuff that was going on, but that pushed me to think even more about all those old religions and how Christianity pulled from each little one. And so I think those were really pushes in the right direction. And then I finally decided I had to have some answers. And that's when I started reading some books, going online and trying to find authors that I could read. I've watched a lot of Stephen Hawking videos online just to try to deal with evolution and all those theories, cosmology and such. And even though I had to watch them two or three times because he's just so smart, it took me a couple passes to get it, you know. I think that those were probably the final pushes for me. And I know that's a long answer, but that's about 2 years ago. And I think that those things were the ones that really eventually pushed me over the edge pretty quickly.
Did you find that accepting evolution and the Big Bang cosmology and all that was necessary in order to be an atheist? Or
for me, it was. Yeah, it definitely was for me. And
needed an answer, basically.
Yeah, or at least I didn't need an answer that said 100% this is true. I needed something that was logical. And something that was keeping with science. And I needed something especially that said, this is what we know, but we don't know everything. We're still learning. Yeah. So that's what it took for me because I like, you know, my sister says that I think too much. Well, it's probably true.
Yeah. There's a question, and I've seen this come up all the time in news articles, and it's basically, you know, why you're, this is the guy's word. It's like, saying these clergy should just quit. Like they're just being hypocrites if they just carry on when they're not believing. I say, why not just tell them all just quit now?
Well, I mean, that's something that I've heard a lot. And as far as being a hypocrite, yeah, absolutely. We were. But most of us are hypocrites about things all the time. The man who goes and he works a factory job and hates it every minute and, you know, is producing this product that he doesn't believe in. I mean, it's really no different. I know that a pastor's charged with the spiritual responsibility. I get that. But the process of getting yourself out of that isn't quite so easy. It's easy to say, but it's not so easy to do. For me and for all the ones that I know on the Clergy Project, they immediately start trying to get out. It's not like they say, oh, I don't believe anymore, but I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to try to get as much money as I can, and I'm going to covertly try to convert them all. No. We fulfill the duties of our job. For a person, let's say that's a doctor, and a doctor doesn't believe in abortion, but yet he has to perform them as a part of his practice. As long as that doctor performs that that procedure and does it with 100% of his skill for every patient and protects their life and, you know, does everything he can medically to do it as best as he can, then he's fulfilling his duties, right? He's not being flippant with it. He's not saying, oh, I don't believe in abortion, so I'm just going to do the shoddy work and kill this woman. She's going to get an infection and she's going to die because I didn't sterilize my hands. Well, the same argument could be posed. As a pastor, I was in the pulpit for 5 months before I could finally get out. But I continued to preach the theology and the teaching and using the Bible and everything the same way that I had. I continued to visit people who were sick and pray with them. I had a funeral during that time. I continued to care for the family and perform the funeral in the same exact way I would have had I not made this transition. So, you know, I guess you could argue it both ways. Should you just get out and leave? Well, maybe. Should you stay and protect your family and take care of them who, by the way, they're not the ones making these choices. It's this personal decision. So, you know, I think it's a difficult question and also think it's very unfair for a person to just say, you just need to quit and leave. If you're not the one who's in the situation, I don't see how you can genuinely make a compassionate and empathetic decision for somebody else.
Yes, it is difficult. I can carry from here, and I want to ask you about another point. Religions people say it, you are already choosing this religion. You should not now refuse this religion because you are choosing. How I can choose some things when I am just a child? I don't know anything about anything in this world. How will be choose something when you some adult order you to believe? How you choose something when you someone tell you, if you don't believe about this, we will kill you? How you can put order and threat and fear with free will choose?
Well, that's because there is no free will choice. not when it comes to religious fear. I mean, religious spheres, because you're right. The things that you've described, the things that I've described. I was born in America, in the South, to Christian parents who were very conservative. So guess what I grew up to be? I grew up to be a person still living in the South, a person who's still white, although I don't know how you change that one. and don't give me any racist comments. That was a joke I was picking on myself. And, you know, a conservative Christian. It's cultural. It's the way you were born. It's the way you were raised. Had I grown up in India, I'm sure the story would have been completely different. And again, the discussion that we had earlier about the programming that goes on from the time you're born to the little bitty cute Noah's Ark playset that minimizes the suffering point of it, emphasizes the point that if you don't behave, this is what God's going to do to you, and making it attractive to follow God because he's going to rescue you in his big boat, you know, which is really oversimplifying the argument. But it is just a progression, a very well thought out, well crafted progression of desensitizing and indoctrinating people to their point of view, to their position in that religious view.
Their abused childhood, really.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Okay, question from the chat room from Bodtabits. Did you have the feeling that you'd wasted part of your life when you came out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I still struggle with that.
Okay. That's nice and quick. Sorry, I'm going to check. There was another question. I think, I don't know if someone misheard you. This is from Live Life. Do you think that there's no free will? I can't remember what it was you actually said.
As far as what religion is, and again, my opinion, as far as what religion is saying, that you have a free will to choose, just take Christianity. It's your free will that allows you to choose to accept Jesus. I think that a lot of that is not true because you have been so inundated and indoctrinated with the theology and given this ultimatum of, well, if you don't believe, then the results of that is going to be a perilous torture, burning in fire, this horrible, horrible thing. Well, if that's your only two choices, if you're standing in front of somebody and they say, either you eat this Twinkie or I'm going to shoot you right now, I'm going to eat the Twinkie. I mean, I hate the crazy things. I don't even think they're real food, but I'm telling you what, I'm going to eat it before somebody shoots me or stabs me or whatever. So when you think of it that way, I guess, yeah, you do have a choice, but the chances that you're going to make a different choice are slim to none.
Okay.
What did you think about it when you still believed?
When I still believed, I thought it was free will. That's what I had been taught, and the free will was exercised in this way. My free will, I accepted, and I'm right. Your free will, you denied, and I'm so sorry for you, but I have to do everything in my power to change your mind to save you.
Really, we are so sorry when you say religions people like this. We are so sorry for you. You are not sorry for me. You are accept books, holy books, Quran or other books, and said I will be in hell in eternity, and you won't tell me in this life too. So how you be sorry for me? This is ironic statement. I hate it when you religious people say it.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Kind of like how I'll pray for you translates to fuck off.
I know. Tell us how you really feel now.
Yeah. There's a question from Polly Chaser. I said, is there anything in particular with your belief system that you struggle to let go of, like idea of an afterlife?
No, I don't. Not in that area. There are other things that I don't know if I struggle to let go of them, but I miss it. In some cases, it would be easy to know that there was somebody out there listening who cared and I could talk to and they would help me make my decisions. Now, true, I could probably do the same thing with a crystal ball, but it would be really nice. I think that's one reason why we want it. It would be really nice to have this superhero that would come in and help us to make the right choices. I think that's something that's attractive to most people but it's pie in the sky. It's not reality. The idea of an afterlife, that never really did sit very well with me anyway, because I would think about, I'm this ADD person. So I would sit there even as a younger person and think, okay, going to go up there, going to walk around on streets of gold, going to have a house, going to have a mansion, probably food. What else am I going to do? We didn't
it's
have video
get
games
boring
back
after
then.
The first couple of million years.
Yeah, exactly. Shoot, for me, I'd get bored after the first half a day.
even if you don't get bored, if you don't feel you are not interesting about that heaven, how you someone live in heaven to eternity and see their lovers, it in hell for eternity. That's opposite love. That's opposite humanity. That's opposite mercy, even for what's called gods or Allah or anything.
Yeah, it is. It's a strange, warped mentality. I've had people whom I knew for a long time and cared for and still care for. I mean, you just can't not care for somebody. It's a strange thing about our human relationships. Somebody can hurt us and we're not happy with it. We don't appreciate it, and I'm not going to put myself out there to be hurt by them again, but I still care for them. But they made the comment that I had broken this relationship by breaking covenant with God by abandoning him, and that they were praying that God would punish me, in a sense, so that I would come to my senses and return. So this person is saying, you know, break it down out of the religious language. Okay, you turned your back on God. All right, that means I can't hang out with you anymore, even though I've been your friend for this X number of years. And to add insult to injury on that one, not only am I not going to hang out with you, I'm praying that some kind of horrible thing is going to happen to you so that even though you may be paralyzed for the rest of your life, at least you'll come back to God.
That's love with condition, love with obey. Obey me and I will love you. If you don't obey me, I will put you in a hell for eternity. That's
exactly.
Kind of love. It's the psycho kind of love. Really?
Yeah, doesn't it also say somewhere in, maybe it's not in the Bible, maybe it's in some of the texts that didn't make it in, I don't know, but that one of the pleasures of being in heaven is that you get to watch the sinners being tortured forever.
I think that's in one of the apocryphal books, but yeah, even though it's not in like the approved canon, Protestant canon, the idea is still represented by the people and what they believe.
Yeah.
Don't even get me started on those other books. Those are horrible, evil books.
Yeah. I've had a look at a couple of them, and they're kind of funny.
That's why
I can't remember the one that describes hell with. What was it? People who have abortions will be, have their dead fetuses crapping into their mouths or something. It's just, it's pretty sick stuff.
Yeah, I was in a questioning phase when I think it was the Gospel of Thomas came out. And everybody was in an uproar over this. This is an extra biblical writing. It's apocryphal and it's not a part of the canon. And so they started using good research to debunk the whole thing. I mean, they were just ripping it apart, going back. And I'm sitting there thinking back. Of course, I wasn't thinking it then, but thinking back, I'm like, why don't you use those same methods on the scripture and you'll come up with the same conclusion, you know?
Exactly.
That's just crazy stuff. And that's another reason, by the way, Catholics were wrong, because they read all those books.
There's another question from Live Life. He is saying, do you think religious fundamentalists will get more extreme in their views as we progress with human rights and equality?
Of course. Not everybody, but I think they have no choice.
Yeah. They're basically being cornered, isn't it?
Yeah, they're losing ground. Everything that an atheist or an agnostic, even a deist, represents is a direct affront to them. And for Christians, religious people, to come out to say, this is the process we've used and this is why we no longer believe, to have clergy people come out and say those very same things, I think it's just... it's putting them in a corner. And when you get put in a corner, you just become angry and you lash out. And I think, that's going to happen even more.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with you on this point. As a human rights activist, I found this on the ground a lot. People ask me why you speak or raise your voice for sake of gays. You are not gays. But I am a human being. I don't need to be gay, belong to gay community to raise my voice for them, because they are human being and I am human being, so I should raise my voice for them. I am raise my voice for women, children, and others. It doesn't matter. My issue is I am raised for human rights, not for that person. So they are not afraid. From that, they are so afraid from that. There are things religion will religion will go away when human rights become reality. But if you are think logic and fair, they will find human rights, respect everyone rights, including yeah. them. But there are not. There are not say that in the, from that angle. And that's really sad. It make me sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Okay.
There was one question going back to your kind of coming out and compared to like some of the other members of the Clergy Project. Do you feel your coming out was maybe easier or harder than some of the other people? Because I know, well, I know in comparison to Jerry, like who I've had the pleasure of speaking to briefly, just how do you think your coming out went?
I mean, I think the circumstances were different, but yeah. I don't think the I don't think that they were very much different. I think we've all kind of gone through the same things. You know, we're both without a job for a period of time. Both of us had family that completely abandoned us. The towns where we live became basically just I stayed in the house for a good period of time because I didn't want to go out. I knew I was going to be confronted. I couldn't deal with it at the time. And I was so depressed about it. You know, continually for me, and I think I've heard Jerry say the same things, the issues of emails that are horrible. When I turned the email account off, I got regular mail that was just absolutely horrendous. Voicemails where people are threatening to harm me, harm my family, rape me, you know, wishing these evil things to befall me, like I said from this other friend, hoping that God would punish me in some way so that I'll return to God. I mean, just horrible. Then the news, of course, goes into, you know, it's hard to even describe, but yeah, we both, I know I can speak for Jerry and myself. It's just been a horrible ride. And at the same time, there's been some positive things from the free thought community. People just reaching out that I never even knew before. And I've been thinking a lot about this as my 1 year anniversary is coming up, just how many people have become true friends and have stood by me and, they haven't been perfect, that's for certain, but I've definitely found that there's people who don't care about that. They love me for who I am, and I appreciate that.
Marty, did you have a question there?
Yeah. Do you think free thinkers will be more available in real life, especially among teenagers and children, because my concern always it is children, because I believe our duty as human being to protect children rights from any abuse, religion abuse or other abuse. But in reality, I don't found that chance to do that. My concern, how we can protect children from adoptions of religions and others awful issues in religions like hit each others and just feel like the other child is evil for the other child's beside him or her. How we can approach them?
Well, when it comes to kids, that's a very, very hard thing because in America, the parent has rights over that child. And the people and the government really have rights to step in, as far as I understand, in cases of physical abuse or sexual abuse or neglect. And if that child is being raised, like I was raised in a Christian home, and my parents were good parents. Yeah, they were very conservative Christians. They were strict in our beliefs, but they provided for me very well. They loved me and took care of me and provided a good home. So in that kind of situation, that's the ones that are really difficult, because the parent, their parental rights allows them to do that. So the question is how do you deal with that? Well, I don't know, honestly. That's one of those things. I guess you'd have to prove that there's harm coming to that child. And I mean, that's really, really, unless you outlaw religion, that's just not going to happen. So some of the things we can do, well, we can make sure that our states and our public school systems provide a very well-balanced, science-based, non-religious education that includes things like a comparative religions class, that it exposes the child to a bigger world than in what they exist at home. You know, make sure that they have opportunities with groups within the school, that there are not just church groups that meet after or come into their schools, but there are 4-H or science clubs or, I don't know, other groups we haven't even thought about, that the kid is able to get exposure.
So do you think the school will get the lead in this part, because individually we cannot do anything, but school as the place of education should do that role.
I think so, but it's a very difficult thing. I mean, I know several states are dealing with laws that are being put on the books or being proposed that will make creationism the science taught. So as freethinkers, we've got to stand up and fight these kinds of things. And not just necessarily freethinkers, anybody who believes that education is a cornerstone of a kid's learning and education, they should be right in there with us saying, no, this person needs to have a scientifically based education without, if you want to teach mythology, fine, teach mythology. I learned it. You know, I loved it. I always thought Roman and Greek mythology was kind of cool, but keep it out of the science classroom. You know, I never was taught during science class that fire was brought from, was it Prometheus brought fire?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I had one of those brain farts. It's like, oh, what was the guy's name again? I'm acting all smart here and I don't remember his name.
Jay, do you have another question there?
Yeah, I am just go further in this point. In Islamic cultures, we talk this in school. You should kill Jews, you should kill non-Muslim, you should kill Christian, you should... This is in Quran, and we study that intensively every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how I would deal with that, because for now in the, within the Christian world, there isn't this idea of, we're going to kill you, we're going to kill you. I can't say it wasn't that way in the past, but at least physical violence isn't a part of it, aggressive physical violence. But yet in the Muslim world, and radical Islam, militant Islam, that's a very real part of it. And just like you said, kids are raised thinking this is what you do, this is the way you live your life. And Jay, isn't it that young kids are a part now of, don't they actually take part in some of these violent things from especially the boys at an early age?
Looks like we lost her again.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's right. Somebody online can send a message on the chat room and tell me whether that's right or not. But, you know, that's another one of those toughies I don't have an answer to.
Yeah. What I'm thinking is basically just show them that it doesn't work. I mean, the more progressive Western societies become, at some point, I'm thinking that even the most backwards part of the Middle East will look at it and go, wait a minute, maybe they're doing something right.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It will take an enormous amount of time and maybe the next generation, maybe two or three generations from now. I don't know. It's taken this long to just get this far. You know, when it affects everything you believe, that's pretty difficult to overcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's say you're also now the director of the Florida Humanists.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about what your day-to-day work is in that?
Yeah, that's actually a really neat position that I think, as a former pastor, I'm perfect for the job. The Humanists of Florida is a statewide organization that is a connecting point for the other state organization, the local groups, which includes, I mean, there's atheist groups, secular Jewish groups, humanist groups, skeptics in the pub, student groups. They're all kind of connected under the Humanist of Florida. And what we do and what I do is a meeting and talking to these local group leaders, trying to offer them training and assistance. I'm hosting several leadership summits around the state, which I have one coming up pretty soon, where all the local leaders and regional leaders get to sit down around a table and we all discuss what's going on in their area and how can we work together and, you know, just build this kind of relational atmosphere so that people can't say, oh, I'm in Tallahassee. I didn't know there was another group that was just in my same city, which happens a lot. So we're building all these relationships. We're trying to offer training and resources. I'm available to speak to groups, to do humanist celebrant, you know, weddings, funerals, whatever kind of services. My ultimate goal is to offer like resource manuals on fundraising or group development and, you know, just all these types of things. Plus, I mean, I just talk on the phone to a lot of people every day and I like that.
Going to ask, have you ever thought about maybe, like now that you're with the humanists, have you ever thought about becoming a celebrant with them? As kind of, I'm just guessing it's skills you can transfer quite easily to it.
Yeah, I'm actually qualified to do that.
All right.
I have, in the state of Florida, I still have the ability legally to perform services, change of life, not change of life, that's menopause. Phases of life, you know, babies born, marriages, kids go off to school, all those things that we celebrate as humans. You know, I can do those things. I'm very well trained in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'd like to see our groups in Florida move more towards certifying and training, which I could do that easily. And there's a few other former clergy people who are clergy project members now in Florida who could also train celebrants easily.
And is there much of a demand for humanist ceremonies in Florida?
There is some. I think that the idea hasn't really gotten off the ground because people just don't know that there are those available.
Okay.
So, you know, one of my goals is to publish those lists and keep them up to date and keep the word out there.
Yeah. You said interesting things, interacting with people. Your work before, it is make your work now easily because you used to interact with people. Directly and talk to them. I'm not implying it is as religion work, it is good. No, I'm just say as a human being or to understand human behaviors and all of that. That give you the edge in this field?
Well, I definitely think it gives me an edge in the fact that our human psychology and the way that we are put together as humans, we desire those types of things. I mean, yeah, religion has hijacked it. And so they've been the ones that said, oh, this is the only place that you can get it, and these things only exist as religious experience. Well, that's hogwash. That's not true. As human beings, we want to be connected to people, and we are. You know, whether it's a group that we meet after work and have a drink with, or, you know, however, family groups, sports clubs, whatever, we're connected with people, and we want to be. We care about people. So I think those are not religious. They're just human. And the things that a religious organization offers, we want those and we can have those. We just don't have to threaten people with torture for eternity to have it. So I think that my training, my education, and my experience in offering and building this type of community, I think it's just perfect. I won't say it was a match made in heaven, but you know.
And it was a very general question, just saying, how is your life now? And that's from Goldsmith.
It's better. Most days it's better. The hubbub has died down for the most part. My family, you know, I'm back in the town where I've always, well, you know, in Florida, and most of the time I go out and I don't have to worry about anybody saying, oh, there she is, you know. I haven't been confronted by anybody like that in quite a while. So, you know, some normalcy's coming back. I've got some friends now within our local free thought group, and that's always helpful. So, like I said, most days. Then there are some days, this last week, I've had some pretty rough days where I just wanted to stay in my pajamas all day and not do anything because, you know, I think the grief phase after you leave religion, especially when it was deeply entrenched, I think that phase of grief lasts for longer than it's lasted longer than I thought it would.
Okay, I thought there was another question. Oh, sorry, there is one I got via Skype in a PM, and it's from Belzar. Have you had any contact from ex-Muslims in Europe regarding setting up a clergy project over there, or anyone international in general?
Yeah, we've had some folks international that I definitely know, but we've not had anybody wanting to set anything up in a different country. They just have become a part of this one. Now, one of the challenges that we've faced is a language barrier. You know, how do we talk to people from Brazil who speak Portuguese, or from the Middle East where they speak Arabic? That's a big problem. It's a good problem. It means that people worldwide are beginning to find out, but, you know, it's something that somebody's going to have to take some language classes, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. And did you have a follow-up there, Marty?
No, I don't think so. I think, well, a bit of a comment, I guess. The language thing is obviously a problem, but at the same time, I think it sounds pretty good that they want to become part of the same group instead of having different groups all over the place.
It is, and it's really a neat thing to see. There's people worldwide coming together. People not just in Christian and Catholic denominations, but from every religious, from a majority of the religious traditions and beliefs. And everybody is coming together, and there's not division, and there's not fighting, and there's not saying, oh, mine's better than yours, no, mine's better than yours. It's like when you take that religious ingredient out, people can sit down together and actually have a conversation.
We are fighting through logic.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, and exactly. We don't have to agree, and we're not going to. I'm sure there are things that I've said that people who are listening and that you guys are like, no, I don't agree with that. well, fine, we're free thinkers. You can think the way you want. I can think the way I want. And we can still be friends.
Okay. Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
There's another question from Belzer, and he's saying, is there a difference between, so how is Florida north and south of Orlando when it comes to fundamentalism?
North of Orlando is definitely more conservative. If you get into the Florida panhandle area that's near Georgia and Alabama, it's very conservative.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with the geography there exactly. I know what the panhandle is, but...
Orlando is just kind of central state, Walt Disney World. And then everything south of that is really, really, for the most part, very liberal. Fort Lauderdale, Fort Myers.
Okay.
Yeah, Miami, Key West.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a question from Shy Frog as well. And how does fundraising in Teresa's organization differ from when she was in the church? Any qualitative differences?
Fundraising, yeah, there's differences. I mean, for one, I'm not attaching an eternal supernatural benefit to you giving your money. If I were, it would probably be a little easier to get it. But you also know, if I tell you that your money that you give to the Humanists of Florida is going into a grant program for new affiliate and local groups for students, then you know, okay, that's where the money's going, and you also know what's going to happen with it. It's going to be a real physical, tangible benefit. You know, it's not going to be going for me to send a teenager to Africa so they can convert people. Yeah. And there'll be some supernatural reward. You know, it's something real and tangible, and I think it's easier to get donations that way.
I was probably going to ask about that. How, like, looking back, like, did you do much charity work as a pastor? Like,
oh yeah, sort of, yeah, I did a lot. That was.
And like, how do you feel now, looking back on, like, I don't know if you raised money for missions. How do you look back on that now?
I did. I did raise money for missions. I participated in a lot of missions overseas, Central America, South America. And, you know, while there was always this part attached to it that what we were doing, we were going to do these good things for you, and then we were going to have church services, I still, even though I don't agree with that part, I still agree with the part that what we were doing there, establishing feeding programs, repairing homes, building wells, whatever it was, those things were good, and I don't regret those. I just wish that we could have just gone and said, hey, we love you. You're human beings in need. We're human beings who have the ability to help you. So that's why we're here.
Okay. I think Jay was going to say something, but no. Surprise, surprise, she's disconnected again. Marty, do you have something to come in with there?
No, I don't think so. Well, I guess the whole charity thing, if you donate to a religious charity, do the people running it, like take a part of that? Or how does that work?
You mean like a percentage goes straight into the church kind of thing?
Yeah, because I mean people give tithes and stuff like that, and they expect, well, you know, churches do charity work and stuff. But I'm thinking the priests get paid.
Yeah, they do. I mean, in the church, that's exactly right. The church sets up a budget, and each piece of that budget is accounted for: salary, church expenses, light, water, whatever. Now you can also do like any other nonprofit, and you can say, I'm giving $1,000 specifically for this mission, and 100% of it goes to that mission. Now nonprofits are set up the same way. A nonprofit does fundraising, and part of that's going to pay my salary, and I really appreciate it. But they're also these other things that according to the budget and the goals of the organization that the money's going to go to. And again, you can give your money and say, this is going for scholarships for those local startup student groups, and 100% goes to them. Or supposed to.
It was just like on that, like the charities you're involved in, were they also the abstinence-only ones in Africa? Was there any of that that you were aware of?
No, that I was aware of, no.
Yeah, because I know it's something that's been brought up a lot, like the funding of abstinence-only programs in these countries.
Yeah, most of the things that I was involved in were very, very, very poor countries like Nicaragua, in one of the poorest towns.
It was things like getting sanitation and basic education out here.
Yes, we set up some schools in an area that was near a landfill where people lived.
Yeah.
Families, et cetera, lived, and they had no way to learn. We set up computer labs where they could learn to speak English, because if they could speak English, they could make $20 a day as a translator, which is, that's a lot of money down there,
Kind of following on from that.
Hi again.
Oh, Jay's back.
Hi, Jay.
I'm so sorry. My computer on my net. Get L from facts. So I don't hear anything. I don't hear anything what you said, but I will carry from education. Education. And what I mean education, I mean real education. Science and logic and real education, not love of religions. Education is the key, in your opinion. Personally,
yes.
I believe education is the key. Good education and high quality education is the key to progressive and develop human being as a human being.
Yes.
Because it doesn't give you only open mind, it gives you two wonderful tools to think as you want and to analyze as you want.
So, your opinion. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, a good quality, well-rounded education from early life on up through college, is the key. And I understand that there are some people who may not be as intelligent as others, and that's something that happens. I don't know why, and it's nothing we can control, but that doesn't mean we can't educate them and teach them to think. Thinking doesn't have to do with how smart you are. And I'm not terrific at math, and I hate math. But I can still think. And thinking, for me, education and this critical thinking is what we have to really promote and encourage and actually, be advocates and activists in our own local communities to make sure that that's what's happening with our kids. We've got to fight for children because nobody else is going to, and they don't know any better.
Yes, I agree with you totally. By the way, intelligence, it's a different types of intelligence there. You don't need to be perfect in math to be intelligent. You can be intelligent in other fields. There is a lot of different type of intelligence. So don't anyone not perfect in math, don't feel you are not intelligent. You are intelligent, but in your way, in your field, in your type of science or logic.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you.
Thank you.
We've just got 15 minutes left, so anyone get your final questions in as quick as you can. Like I said, 15 minutes to go. So I think it was just... my question's gone now. Just when I... Marty or Jay, do you have further questions? Well, I'll check with the chat room.
Okay. Go ahead, Martin. Go ahead.
No, I don't think I have anything to ask. I think I've asked my main question. So you go ahead.
Okay. You said, Teresa, there is upside downs in the feeling when you someone be so in religion and after that come out. Yes, I agree with you on this point. But in general, I don't know about you. I'm not speak behalf of you, but I feel I'm not religion person from my childhood, but I feel with atheists, you find your peace as human being with your conscience. This is a very important issue. When you make your conscience meet your mind as human being without that conflicts from religions to hate someone or kill someone or pray against someone. Do you think that's gain and that's win? It deserves, in my opinion, it deserves every fight and every fear and everything. What do you think?
It's one of those, you guys ask really, really hard questions.
It's not an easy... I am right there.
Yeah, you are right. I mean, it's a difficult thing, and it takes addressing each person as an individual, which I think one problem with religion, again, is that it's not an individual thing. It's a mass mentality, and you have to line up and follow with the mass. But we should be seeking to do things individually and approaching people as individuals, recognizing that we are all different. We can gather underneath one single banner and say, okay, yeah, we don't have a belief in the supernatural and we're committed to this course of action. And we can gather into that and we can all be different and we can be individuals with it. And for me, that's one of the greatest things that I've experienced over the last year is just this ability to be who I am and to think for myself and to develop and to grow and to learn. And, you know, I have a lot to learn. I have a lot more to understand and to deal with and grasp. But here's the thing, until the day I die, I hope that's going to be true. And I hope I don't become closed-minded about it.
Okay, there was a question from the chat room, and it's from Goldsmith again. It says, what would be your advice for a person who no longer believes but is afraid to let others know? Basically, the how do you come out the closet question.
Well, that's going to depend on a lot of things. I mean, I don't know if this person is a student living at home with parents, then that's a whole nother game, as you know, a whole nother ball of wax, as we'd say in the South, with a different set of circumstances. Now, if it's something where you can do it at work and you're not going to lose your job, great. Chances are you're probably going to have to keep things like religion and politics to yourself at work in order to keep your job. And that's just, I mean, that has nothing to do, in my opinion, with whether you're courageous or not courageous. It's your job. But with family and friends, yeah, think about it, plan a discussion with it. Figure out how you want to do it, and if you decide that the best course of action for you is to stand up and say, this is who I am, this is how I got there, and this is what I believe about life. You're going to have to figure out, like, I knew I could talk to my sisters in this way, but then with my dad, that was a completely different thing, and it was very, 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 it was the hardest person I talked to.
How did it go with your dad, if you don't mind us asking?
Surprisingly, I mean, it was very difficult, and of course he didn't agree with me, and he was very concerned, but he didn't abandon me. He said, you're my daughter, and that's not going to change. I was expecting and prepared to be ostracized completely from the family, but every chance he got, he talked to me about it. He told me the scriptures. He prayed for me, you know. But it's my dad. He was concerned for me, and he expected that, based on what he believes, that I was going to die and I wasn't going to be with him where he's at, and I was going to be tortured. So for him, that's a very, very scary thing. And you know, he died just a few months afterwards. And I stayed with him while he was sick and in the hospital, and I heard him at night, and he would do that. He would pray for me and cry, and, you know, that's just hard, sitting here thinking about it. Yeah. Jay, I'm sitting here thinking about it, going to cry.
Yeah. Yeah, because I know this feeling too.
Yeah, because his heart was broken over that. Absolutely broken. Yeah. And those are things that you have to consider and be ready. You're never ready to deal with it. You're never ready for what's going to happen. But at least you can know that it's coming.
There was kind of question relating to that. Was there anyone in particular who reacted worse than you thought they would?
Like, you'd, oh, like, yeah.
Really, yeah. Reacted, like you were just really surprised how badly they took the news.
Yeah, there were several. Actually, there were a lot that were, there were a lot of people that said, and these are people that I knew to be Christians that I had worked with or done one kind of thing or the other with, and they were the ones who said the most horrible things, wishing the most horrible kinds of torture and punishment, not just hell, but you know, in this life,
yeah.
Meet somebody in a dark alley that stabs me to death, or, you know.
And these are the kind of, church regulars who would, you know, help everyone out and that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
And they just totally, the coin totally flipped when this happened, yeah.
Yeah. I know, it's the craziest thing. I would not have expected. Like you said, I wouldn't have expected those kinds of things from them. I would have expected it from some other people, but it was just really disheartening.
Yeah, and, well, on the flip side, was there anyone you thought was going to take it extremely badly that actually opened up and they were okay about it?
Yeah, my dad. I mean,
I kind of mean more outside of that. Was there anyone you thought, oh, they're going to, you know, they're going to be really, really mad at me, and they actually turned out to be okay?
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple of friends that were that way. Initially, my sisters and brother didn't understand, and I mean, they didn't abandon me, but I knew that what they were thinking.
Yeah.
And I knew that those kind of conversations were happening. But a funny thing happened, and my dad was sick, and then he passed away all of a sudden. And through that, sounds really kind of weird, but through that, my family, my close family, realized a humanist principle that we don't have a whole lot of time here to be together. And so they put all that stuff aside to restore our family, restore me to the family, I would say. So our relationship has been better.
All right, and we're coming up for 7 minutes left, so I'll let Marty and Jay have their final thoughts or comments for Teresa.
I've got nothing.
Okay.
Well, Jay, you've always got something.
I will not go to sadness of pain.
Are you still there, Jay?
Man, she's had a terrible time.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello, Sir Strife. You're.
Yeah, I was sleeping. I passed out.
All right, no problem.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we've got time. If you have a quick question for Teresa in the last 6 minutes, you can ask it now.
I don't know what questions have been asked. I was going to ask the obvious, like, what made you change?
What
made you become an atheist? Did anyone ask that?
Yeah, that's been covered. Jay,
yeah, I kinda guessed
it. Jay, you can finish your
thought. Yeah, I am back. Yeah. I said a lot of religions people think we don't have feeling, we don't have morals. Wake up religions, people. We are human beings. We have morals. We have feeling. Just we don't need someone give us
You're cutting up, Jay.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
We don't need someone pay for us to treat human being as human being.
So we treat
you as human being. We respect you when you are respect human rights because you are human being, not because someone will pay for us in eternity or now. You should appreciate that because we will give you from our heart. We don't expect any thanks in exchange that. We have moral, we have feeling, okay? But our morality is not come from holy books, it's not from Quran, it is not from God or Allah, it is from our conscience as human being. Your word, Teresa, and thank you so much to enjoy trolling with logic. It's our pleasure to have you here, really. I'm talking behalf of the...
Yeah, very much so. Teresa, we'll give you a few minutes if there's anything you want to promote or just any thoughts you have. You can speak.
Well, I just thank you guys for letting me come on and be a part of the conversation. Again, if you happen to be a clergy person and you're in the position that I found myself in last year and a half, go to theclergyproject.org. You can find a lot of information there. If you're not a clergy person and you're religious, there is a group, my friends, the executive director, recoveringfromreligion.org. You can get a lot of information and support as well. The Humanist of Florida, if you happen to be a Floridian, please go to the Humanist of Florida. Check us out. I would love for you to come on and help us as we try to do many things in Florida, one of which is good, solid science education for our kids. That's a big thing that we fight for and one of our main mission points. Besides that, I mean, my big thing I always tell everybody is think for yourself. Don't let anybody else tell you what you're supposed to believe or think or do.
Well, thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. Just once more, this is our last show on Blog TV. As of next week, we are going to be on the service Vaughan Live. That's what we're broadcasting with. And next week, we have someone Teresa's familiar with. We have Dan Barker coming along.
Yes.
And we're very much looking forward. He has one of the distinctions of being the most requested person people have wanted on the show, and we finally managed to track him down. So, very much looking forward to that. So everyone, please go below. There's a link in the playground underneath the chat, and there's also a link above the chat, so you can't miss it. And we'll see you all there next week on the show. Also, if you have any points you wanted to raise with us, but you couldn't, you forgot, contact at trollingwilllogic if you're a podcast listener as well, please contact us on that if you have questions. Contact at trollingwilllogic.com. And yes, Goldsmith, there is a chat function at the new site. So thank you very much. Everyone in the chat room, a big thumbs up for Teresa for taking the time out. And a big thank you to my panel. And we'll see you all next week on Vaughan Live with Dan. Good night, everyone.